welcome to Better Than Mario Brothers, where each episode we delve deep into cinema sewer. I am Chris Bolton. With me, as always, my partners in podcasting, Mr. Mark Williams.
Hello.
And Miss Helen McIntyre.
All right.
And this episode, Mark has decided to send us plunging headfirst back into the world of Death Race because we're gluttons for punishment, apparently. So
I figured it had to be an improvement on last month.
What was last month? I've blocked it. Oh, X versus Seven. yeah. Like, yeah.
Slow gradual climb.
I'll give it that. It's definitely an improvement on X versus Seven.
Slightly.
No, I think it's a marked improvement on X versus Seven, but, you know, let's not dump on it too much yet, I guess. Let's dive in. I've got quite a few pages of notes this week, and I can actually read them tonight, which is a bonus.
Fucking hell.
So this might
actually... I made zero notes, so this should be fun.
This might have some sort of coherence to it, unlike the film. I mean, the first thing that struck me with this, like, it's got exactly the same intro as Death Race, just not as fucking good. And that should have said alarm bells ringing straight away. Like, it's exactly the same, just not as good. So, straight away, I was a bit like, oh, I don't know about this. And I knew going in that it was going to be a prequel as well.
Now this confused the fuck out of me, because I remember when we talked about it last time, we were talking about Death Race, we then read through what the second and third films were.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd forgotten by the time I came to this that they were both prequels. And then obviously the clue's in the title, because Death Race 2 and Death Race 3, 2 and 3 are obviously going to be before Death Race, because that makes all the fucking sense in the world.
Of course it does. I mean, that's not unheard of, though, is it? For, you know,
no.
A successful franchise sort of to signifier. Just kick back to a prequel. You know, and generally the prequels are worse. That's, you know, par for the course. Whether or not this is actually worse than Death Race,
we'll come to that.
Yeah, I'm still a little bit on the fence, if I'm honest.
Yeah. But the one thing that did strike me with this straight away, with the intro, the intro to the last one is they're talking about the banks have collapsed, society's on the brink of destruction. This isn't that far fucking in advance. That collapse must be fucking instant.
Well, the timeline's all over the fucking shop, innit? And I'm not claiming to be any expert on the Death Race universe, but, you know, we watched that last film it was less than a year ago. I think it was around about
5 months.
Yeah. So I think it was around about 8-9 months ago. So it's still relatively fresh in my mind. Yeah. And there were several points in this where I was just going, no, that doesn't make sense. That doesn't make sense. And, like, if you're going to do a prequel, like, look, retconning's a thing, I get it, but, like, make it make sense. If you're going to retcon stuff, you have to make it make sense.
Yeah.
And I think overall, one of my biggest problems with this film is it's so obsessed with the fact that it's a prequel that it just can't put everything aside and be its own fucking film. There's no story here whatsoever, because it's so obsessed with how Death Race comes to be. And all of this. And actually, that's really not fucking important. You could still be a prequel and just have Death Race, like, as a fully fledged thing ready to go. The important thing, if you're going to be a prequel, is the characters within the world, really, and seeing where that kind of takes us. But I've got a lot to say about the Death Race timeline as we go through. I mean, I didn't really do any further research other than, like, when we did Death Race, we read the synopsis for Death Race 2 and Death Race 3. So, I mean, as the credits were rolling, I'll be honest, I was getting pretty fucking excited. Like, you see the names rolling through those credits, and then, like, straight away you get the shitty intro, and I'm like, oh, no, this isn't going to be very good. And then Danny Trejo's name pops up, and I'm like, oh, no, it's going to be fine. Like, if nothing else, it's got Danny Trejo going for it. It'll be absolutely fine, because he's never anything but brilliant. Like, he's always watchable. Yeah. So I'm like, it's going to be fine. It also tells you exactly what type of film it's going to be immediately out of the gate, because Danny Trejo's in it.
Yeah.
But that's fine as well. And I will say this as well, saying it knows what type of film it wants to be. One of the criticisms that we leveled at Death Race was it was a little bit on the fence as to whether it was like a serious dystopian sci-fi or whether it was just a trashy B-movie action film, and that worked against it. I don't think you can level that criticism at this. Like, all of that sci-fi pretense is gone. Yeah. This knows exactly what it is, and I'm kind of here for that, at least. So it gets points for that, definitely. And then we're straight into basically a prison fight, when it opens.
Yeah.
And again, like, just like the fights in Death Race, but not as good. Just like these. In fact, the fights, considering the first 45 to 50 minutes of this film, it's not Death Race, it's like Death Fight or Death Match, or whatever they call it.
Yeah.
The fights are fucking appalling. They're terrible. Yeah. But they are, I think, in fairness, they are the only side of the kind of choreography and the action in this film that I thought wasn't up to snuff. Other than that, I think all of the action is handled very, very... I think the car chases are really good. You know, I think everything else is fine. It's just the gunplay is fine when that comes. It's just the fucking fist fights are appalling.
They're not helped by the gratuitous slow-mo either.
No.
Which they seem to forget about after about 5 minutes.
No. There is enough slow-mo in the opening, like 30 seconds, to clean out Zack Snyder for the rest of his... For generations, basically. It's just... But like, it doesn't work in the fights. But again, when it comes to the gunplay and the explosions and stuff like that, I think it's actually deployed well. The guy clearly knows how to make a film, right? You've got to say that. Like, I can't really criticize anything technical here. The story is what's at fault.
Yeah.
And that's my general issue with the whole film. I think the only place it really falls down is the script, and the fights are a bit shit. But I think other than that, you know, the performances are actually good. Not just okay. Lots of them are actually good.
Mm.
And I think the cinematography is decent. The action sequences are handled well. The sound mix is a bit weird. There's something off about the sound mix, but generally it's technically fine. It's the story is the issue, but... Mm. Yeah, we open with this appalling fight in the prison yard. I mean, it's bog standard stuff. It's just not done very well. And then I don't know how I didn't clock her name in the credits.
Yeah.
But then they immediately cut over. And I'm like, fuck me, it's Maggie. And then I was all the way in. Incidentally, she is far and away the best thing in this entire film. And it's, I mean, spoilers. It's fucking criminal when there's at least one other prequel that they've killed her character off, because she's the best thing in this by a fucking mile. Also, if I need to, I'll put my case forward for this later on, but debatably the actual hero of this film, because she's the only motherfucker that's got any purpose or agency and knows what she wants. Everybody else is just fucking stumbling around.
Yeah, they're just there.
Yeah. She at least has purpose. She knows what she wants. She wants power, and she can do whatever she needs to do to get it.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, her first line as well is that moments ago this riot started, so I just happened to fucking be there. And it just again sets the tone for the film. It's so fucking stupid and so beyond far-fetched, it's unbelievable. You just think, fuck it, just go with it, because it's telling you straight away what it is. And then once you lean into that, and I think that was one of the things that was missing from the last one, because the last one sort of started off as though it was going to take itself seriously, and it took a long time to settle into what it actually was, if it ever did. This one straight away has gone completely tongue firmly in cheek, going, ah, fuck it, we know what we are. We're not Chariots of Fire or Citizen Kane. We're never going to be that sort of film. Let's go and have some fucking fun. And I think that it sets its stall out very early on with that line.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, some of the dialogue is appalling, but it's a lot. But it's actually delivered with tongues firmly in cheek a lot of the time as well. And I'm all the way here for that. So, it's fine. So it was just a nice little surprise for me, because I think I actually knew she was in this, because I think when we looked at it last time, I was like, oh, yeah, it's got Lauren Cohen in it as well. It'll be absolutely fine.
But I'd forgotten that conversation. I saw her name and then to who it was, but then I didn't expect her to be that role at all.
No, is it like complete opposite to how we're used to seeing her? But like,
and pretty much every role she's played, other than this, so she's always very, she's always very wholesome, very, you know, very relatable and likable.
Yeah. Whereas here she's just playing a stone cold bitch. But as I say,
and wears it well, to be fair.
Yeah, debatably the hero of the piece, in my opinion. So there's that, and then I've just made a comment: was this audio recorded in a fucking wardrobe? Because I don't know what's going on with the sound mix, but it really
I think
does.
In a pub in St. Mellon's.
It just sounds, it sounds like it's been done in a fucking cardboard box or something. It's
fucking awful.
It's so flat. It's horrendous. But, you know, whatever. It's probably a little bit of a blessing because, you know, it does kind of mean you can't quite hear Luke Goss doing his best John Travolta impression for most of the film. Because the first time he opened his mouth, I was just like, yes. what the fuck is that? Like,
yeah.
What is it? Is he doing? Who invited Danny Zuko? Like, what's going on here? What a ridiculous fucking choice that was.
Yeah.
And it, again, he's like, fair play, he maintains it all the way through the film. Like, it doesn't slip. None of it sounds bad, but why? Why Danny Zuko specifically?
It doesn't make any fucking sense.
No. I mean, nothing about his character makes any sense, but just as soon as he opened his mouth, I was like, what the fuck are you doing? What is this? Like, I actually had to go back and watch some other Luke Goss performances just to make sure that I wasn't having a bit of Mandela effect and that's how he always sounds. And it's like, no, this isn't how he always sounds. He is British. I do remember it correctly. Like,
yeah.
It's just... And especially when, like, the hero of the first film was British anyway and, like, he had to basically match characters here. And if you remember in the first film, I kept saying, like, well, he's getting in the car with a fucking British accent. Surely they're going to know it's a different guy. They had the opportunity to shut that loophole
to make
here.
It make sense.
Yeah.
And they didn't.
And I'm like, I think the thinking probably was that you've got Sean Bean's fucking northern whatever the fuck that's supposed to be. I think it passes for English. And they didn't want lots of British accents because it would confuse the fuck out of people because a lot of Americans don't realize there's more than one accent in Britain. We also have the fucking
they'd be like,
Grant.
Which one's Australian?
Yeah, possibly. Possibly. But I mean, you know, on that note then, within, like, we get introduced to Luke Goss, we get his ridiculous accent, and then within the space of about 30 seconds, we get Ving Rhames, and, as you've already mentioned, fucking Sharp as well. So the cast in this thing is stacked. Like, you know, to be fair to those two as well, like, never not watchable. You say what you want about old fucking Sharp, but he is always watchable. In some things more than others, and he does make some very debatable career choices, but he's always entertaining at the very least. So I'm gonna say this because we fast forwarded through a bit of stuff here, but there is no real story other than, you know, Luke Goss goes to see Sharp and they have a bet on the football and it's established that they're kind of matey and they've been working together for years, and it's fine because he's kind of the soft edge good kind of criminal that doesn't like killing. He's kind of like, you know, the anti-Batman, if you like. And he's going to go and do a bank job, but he has to adhere to his very strict moral code and nobody can die when he does this bank job because I don't know. I don't know why. It's just because he's got to be our hero, so he can't be a complete reprehensible piece of shit. So that's it. That's all the story we've got. He's off to do a bank job. And meanwhile, Maggie's setting up fucking death matches, the precursor to Death Race. And she gets chewed out by Ving Rhames because, like, it's not going as well as it should do. And she needs to be making the dollar. That's it. That's as far as the story stretches. And it doesn't really change much from that throughout the entire film. So we get to the bank heist. This is our first big set piece. Of course, it goes wrong. Yeah, because he's been thrown in with all the wrong type of criminals, obviously. Yeah. Right? And, you know, what's the line? Something like 20 jobs or whatever, and nobody's ever got hurt. And then he has to go in and sort it out because he's got to man up and be the hero. Now, look, I got to say, right off the bat, and I know this is going to cause arguments. Look, Statham is way, way, way better at the fighting and the action stuff. There's no debate about that. Luke Goss is a much fucking better actor, though, isn't he?
Oh, clearly.
He's way better than Jason Statham. Like, the amount he's giving in his reactions in that bank, where, like, it's all going slow-mo and people are getting shot around him, and, like, he's got no dialogue, just the amount he's giving in his performance is just like, hang on, mate, remember what you're in here. Like, back off a little bit, isn't it? You know, you're never going to get a nod for this. But throughout the film, like, he does his best. Like, he really does his best with what he's got here. So I'm probably going to dump on him a little bit. And I just want to get that out the way now. Actually, I think he's a really good actor. You know, in general, I like him in most things. And I'm not just saying that, you know, he owes me nothing. But in general, he's quite a good actor. Just let that one sit there. Okay, so... Right. They get in the car. They drive away, and instantly they plow through a pedestrian. Again, right, one of my major wrongs with the last film, if you recall. I discussed it, and I was like, this is supposed to be Death Race. Why aren't they mowing down like pedestrians and shit like that? So it's almost like somebody looked at that first film and went, actually, no, we're missing something here. We are missing something. So we get, like, just plow through a pedestrian in what is, I think, a really fucking good car chase. So I'm feeling pretty good about the film at this point. I'm like, yeah, this story is absolute horseshit. The dialogue's appalling, but the cast is stacked, and they're all pretty good. And the cars are good. Like, the car stuff's been handled fine. And it's called Death Race. So, you know, as long as the cars are all right, be fine. Now, at this point, little do I know, we won't see any more car stuff for about fucking 50 minutes, because it's all going to be fist fights.
That was over 4 fucking hours.
It was probably less than that, to be fair, because I think this whole film is like... what is it,
just
like
shy
80...
of 2 hours, I think.
Is it that fucking long?
I think so. I'll have that.
Yeah.
Right.
I think it is.
To its credit, then, it did not feel that long. Like, I'll be honest, not to bury the lead, I enjoyed this all the way up until the final, like, probably 10 minutes. Like, it had issues. It had issues, and I'm going to call it out for them. But I was going along for the ride until that final fight.
Yeah, it's 101 minutes.
Okay, well, yeah, it's longer than I thought. I had this pegged at, like, 80 minutes and change. So, like, that's a big pat on the back there, then, to be fair. It never dragged. There was no fucking story, and I didn't give a shit about anybody, but it never dragged, so I'll give it that. And then, yeah, so I've just made a note that the fights are bad, but all the other action stuff has been handled very, very well. And then we get, like, stylistically, they actually start to flex their muscles a bit here, because we cut back to fucking Ned Stark looking through the TV, just jumping around the fucking channels. And every channel has the same news report on. And they do the whole thing where, like, the news, you can just follow from one to the other, and the newscasters are all saying exactly the same thing. So you get the complete story about through about fucking 15 channels. And it's actually quite good. And it does fit with the aesthetic that will become Death Race, because it all felt very Verhoeven at that point. It felt like something you would see in RoboCop, just spinning across those channels, and you're getting the same news report on every channel because it's all big fucking media corporations. So that's all good. So Ned Stark's flicking through it all. And yeah, I mean... this is then what passes for a story. He decides that his boy's going to jail, so he's just concerned that basically he doesn't want him to rat him out. So we think. So, okay, off he goes to jail. And then nothing happens for the next 80 minutes, then, if that's how long the film is. I think my notes about story probably stop here. Although I have to say, before we dive into Lucas at jail, actually, Ned Stark does lose his shit and pull the TV off the wall and smash it. And it is the lamest TV smash I have ever seen. Yeah. Like, a rock star, he is not. He kind of... it's almost like he's afraid to break it because it might be like an expensive TV. He just kind of gently picks it up off the side and drops it on the table. I don't know whether it was just like, oh, hang on, we can only afford one TV, and I don't know how many takes we need to do, Ned. So, like, chill out here a little bit.
Yeah, just put it down and we'll break it in post.
Yeah. it's fucking awful. You're, like, so, so fucking lame. So, yeah, we get to jail, and then we find out that apparently Luke Goss is going to be our hero because, like, what, he won't grass up a hardened criminal, and he didn't actually kill anyone himself.
Yeah, he did. He shot the cop in the neck, didn't he?
Oh, yes, he did. Yeah, he did. He did. But, you know, he's going to be our hero just by virtue of the fact that, you know, 006 wants him killed, basically. Yeah. That's it. So he's the hero, because 006 has got a fucking mark out on him. He needs something. We can't just be like, oh, yeah, well, you know, the bad guy wants him dead, so he's the good guy. That doesn't work for me at all. Like I said, he's a convicted cop killer. He's a criminal, even if he wasn't. You know, at least in the first Death Race, we had, like, it was very poorly executed, but we had the whole story about Frank's daughter, and it was just like, you have to get back to the daughter, and like, it was piss poor, and we called him out for it.
Yeah,
but at least it gave us something. You sort of understood why he wanted to race. Because actually, you know, we'll talk.
He hasn't killed anyone in the first film as well.
Yeah, he's completely innocent. He's an innocent man, essentially. Whereas here, this is an actual criminal needing to do time for his actual crimes. Hmm. So, what? Like, why do I care then? What's the what purpose has he got to get out? Because we've not seen what his life is like on the outside either. All we've seen is him having a bet with fucking Ned Stark. So. We don't know anything about his, and he never even gets into it either. There's never any talk about like what you're going to do when you get out or none of it.
No, but the only thing you ever get is when they, I think it's in that bit just before it flashes to 6 months later, where they're talking about the fact that they'd seen that he'd been identified on the bank CCTV, and so they said, you know, he's a known associate of alleged crime boss, and that's it. That's the entire backstory. It's the only thing you ever get.
Mm. Yeah,
and then just after. Literally, it's like, okay, well, that's got to go somewhere,
but it doesn't.
No,
and all we've got is he's this known associate of 006. Then, but he's, you know, he then turns around and says, right, well, he won't rat because he's a good boy, but I need to get him killed anyway, just in case he might. Yeah. Huh? What? So how deep is this relationship then? Because if we're meant to care about it and think of it as a double cross, then he really should be confident that he isn't going to rat him out, which. He won't and doesn't at any point. Even when he but finds out that, there's a mark on him, he's like, nah, he wouldn't do that to me. Nah, definitely not.
But even then, if you want to set it up that there's this relationship and you are going to play off this double cross, you need to build the relationship first.
Yes, exactly. It doesn't need to be like a boss and a driver relationship. They need to be partners, essentially. Yeah. That's what needs to happen here, and he needs to take the fall for him. That's how this needs to go down. And then there can be a bigger fish that you know, Sean Bean just rats him out to when he goes to see him. He's like, no, I wasn't. You know, it wasn't my fault. It was all fucking Luke's fault. He fucked it all up. Incidentally, when I say Luke, I'm not saying Luke because it's Luke Goss. I'm saying Luke because the character's name is Lucas. And they call him Luke. Like, look, that's the type of shit you pull when you have people that really don't know how to act and can't memorize a script. You don't need to do that with Luke Goss. Like, you really don't. But whatever. His name's Luke or Frank by the end of the film, whatever you want to fucking go with. But I think of Frank as being the first film now because we were referring to him as Frank by the end of that. So he'll be Luke through this. So he starts to make his way around jail, and then instantly he lists attaches to him, and so cool, it's the guy from the first one. Like, here's a familiar link. We can see this all kind of pan out, and there are more later on as well. We do get to see some characters from the first one popping up here. The events here have absolutely no bearing whatsoever on this story in the first one. They're just here probably because payday, innit?
Yeah. Now, there was a question I had about this, actually. So, in the first one, Lovejoy's been in that prison for like 3 million years.
Yep, I've got that sentence as well.
Where the fuck is he?
Yep.
Because he was in the car workshop doing all the detail and shit. So, why is he not in this film?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Ian McShane said no.
Of course he did.
Yeah, he saw the first one and fuck that, I'm not going back. That's why Danny Trejo got called in.
Yeah.
And actually probably makes the film better for it as well.
I don't know. Lovejoy was pretty good in the first one.
He's no Danny Trejo.
No, he's no Danny Trejo. You're right.
But yeah, that's first I thought, hang on, if he's been there for 35 years or whatever the fuck it was supposed to be, and he's done his sentence, but he doesn't want to leave, why is he not here? Where's he hiding? Is he in solitary or something?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of shit like that where none of it really marries up with the first film at all. But yeah, List shows up. For some inexplicable reason, List gets to wear a shirt and a jumper. Everyone else is in prison scrubs. But Lists, as part of his character, gets to wear a shirt and a jumper. Never explained. Just can.
And to be fair, it looks fucking freezing there as well, so he needs that jumper.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it can't be that cold because, like, you know, he manages to impress in the showers.
Yeah, and also, like, none of the women wear him very much. So, no. You know, it can't be that cold. You're right. We'll get to that shower scene. Believe me, we'll get to that shower scene. So we get to one of our... We get to one of our... Go on. we had one of our first fights, like proper like death match fights.
Yeah.
And the rules are explained, because that first one we're just kind of thrown in. We don't understand what's going on.
That first one was a riot, wasn't it? It wasn't part of death match.
She just starts discussing death match. Yeah. So we get the death match arena with the bus in the middle, and they start to explain that there are like weapons, and it's all quite similar to the rules of Death Race with it, like unlocking the weapons and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But then as they're explaining the rules, they say there are two ways to win. You can kill your opponent or make him submit. What the fuck? Why would you make anyone submit if you can just kill them?
Yeah. Or if for example you're lists and you get thrown in unfairly, you just submit. You walk in and go, I tap. Job done.
Exactly.
You're not getting killed.
It makes no sense. And they say that like if no one kills or submits, then they both die. But like you say, Mark, that's easy. As list you go in, you trip over, you bash your head, you go, I submit. It makes no sense other than they clearly can't have our lead, who's a nice guy and doesn't kill, and this, that, and the other. They can't have him just go in and start slaughtering people. That would be wrong, because he has no other redeeming qualities that would make us go, oh, it's fine, because he's the hero. So they're just like,
it
no.
It also doesn't work because of the whole system that they've got set up with, like, you jump on one of the sword plates and all of a sudden one of these sort of like gangways will lower down from the bus and then you've got 10 seconds to get in and grab yourself a weapon and then the gangway will lower up. Now they come down slow and they raise slow, and it felt like a long 10 seconds when like one of them was going in the bus, and nobody ever thinks, oh, he's going in the bus, I'm going to go in as well and get myself tore up at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, I was just like, come on, people, strategy.
But not only that,
shit wouldn't fly in Hunger Games.
No. And the thing is, you do that, you follow them and you think, well, they're in an enclosed space, they're not going to expect me to follow them in. You grab the first thing you find and shank them in the back. Job done.
Exactly.
Or
exactly.
If you're a complete fucking pussy, you say, right, I'm going in, I'm going to hide in here until the drawbridge goes back up and the cunt can't get to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I've got more time to tore myself up. And by the time he gets in, he gets the plate reset and he can come in after me.
He can come in, but I've got all the fucking tools. So ha, ha, ha.
Yeah, by the time he arrives, I'm fucking sorted.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's one of these things that when you sort of describe it, you're just like, all right, but it does not work in the film. When you're seeing it in action, you're just like, this doesn't work.
It doesn't work at all. And actually the whole concept of the death match thing doesn't work at all. This is called Death Race. And I don't see why, even if you want to make this a prequel, I don't see why we needed to make the progression from Death Match into Death Race. I don't see what there is to be gained from that. Straight away, she could have just twigged on Death Race instead. And it would have been fine. This could still be the inaugural Death Race if they want. That makes no sense with Frankenstein's story for the next film, by the way, because at the start of the next film he's had four wins and he just needs his final one to escape and what have you, so none of that makes any fucking sense. But they could have just gone straight into it and just said, yeah, we're going to start Death Race.
Even if they wanted to do it and they wanted to have the some of the start they had, you've got the bit where as soon as he goes into the fucking workshop, they let him into the car and he goes off hairing around the fucking prison. Because obviously that's something you can do in a prison. Just drive a car with a goonie around the fucking block. Do that. Have them fucking have illegal fucking drag races. Have them doing something illicit they're not supposed to be doing. That then results in some cunt dying. All of a sudden she goes, I know. Let's have a fucking death race.
Yeah.
It's entertaining.
Or,
boom.
Or you slightly tweak the before timeline with Luke Goss getting caught so that she's already got the death match up and running, and so she's had it for the first time and they've got quite a good market share, and so they're like, okay, right, you've succeeded in your pilot concept, we're going to put the money behind this and give it a go. And when she's running the second death match, she starts losing the TV market share because all of the news networks are broadcasting Luke Goss's chase away from the police, which was being shown on all of the TV. And she's just like, why aren't they watching people kill each other? Why are they watching this guy in a car and all of these police cars getting blown up? I know.
Yeah. And then, even though it's very similar to the plot of the first, that's fine. With these sorts of films, it doesn't matter. Then you're right, Helen, you have your hook and you have your story there, where actually maybe he didn't kill any police officers himself, but she's like, no, he's going to be guilty and he's coming here. because he's my new guy. Like, he's my go-to guy, and then she needs to break in and get him to race. Makes much more sense, right? But who cares about sense? Like, the most important
thing... It's not a sense
film. No, the most important thing, it seems to be, to everybody involved in this film is the franchise. The most important thing is setting up the whole concept of Death Race. And they do it so poorly. It is what it is, right? It's cars with guns and weapons and shit. They could have just... We know what it is. They could have just started. They could have just gone, right, he's in prison and there's Death Race. Off you go. You know, that's fine. And then, like I say, you establish the world and the franchise through the characters then. You know, he's going to be the character that carries this forward into what would become Death Race, right? There's at least another film with Luke Goss. I think there are more Death Race films as well that feature... I think Frankenstein's still in them, but Luke Goss isn't. So, like, this is a character that carries forward.
The direct sequel, Death Race 3, it's set between this one and the original.
There you go.
So Luke Goss is in that one as well.
Yeah, there you go. So, you know, you had plenty of scope to grow the character, but whatever. They did what they did, right? And we've got to suffer with this death match bullshit. But it is the closest thing this film has to a story, which is that Maggie, what's her fucking character's name? Isn't it like November or September?
Jones.
September Jones. I knew it was like a Bond girl. So September Jones basically has a point to prove. Like, you know, this isn't doing what she needs it to do. And Ving Rhames has been leaning on her a bit, you know, and he's just like, you need to turn some fucking coin here. We need to get some money. So this is the closest thing you get to any sort of character development or story from anybody, that she actually kind of puts a big girl pants on and says, I know, I've got a much better idea. This is going to make a fortune. And it does. And then we start to tie into all the, like, she opens it up onto the internet, because there's a throwaway line about that in there, purely because they have to, because that's how it works in the first one. And shit like that. That is the absolute nearest you get to any progression for anyone in this fucking film. Again, that's why she's the hero. Or anti-hero, if you will. So kill your opponent, make him submit, whatever, blah, 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 blah. We have our first fight, and it's not this first fight that Luke jumps in on. He's just watching this one.
He's watching this one. This is the one with the triad who...
Yeah, that's right.
He gets the white supremacist on the ground. He says, fuck you, I'm never going to submit. He swings the axe at his neck and then stops it. He gives up. And they're all... No, he didn't.
Yeah.
No, everyone fucking saw he didn't give up.
Yeah. Yeah.
But fight's over because he said he's admit.
Yeah, and Maggie was pissed. That's right. So then we kind of put our crew together. Luke goes for some lunch in the canteen, and he sits down with Danny Trejo and all of those. And this is the point where you realize how bad the dialogue is, because there's genuine chemistry amongst this cast and they're all doing really fucking well. And this scene, you just watch this scene and you can't help but think, like, if these guys had better material, this would really be something. Like, they've genuinely got chemistry between them. This, you know, you could definitely get, like, your standard machismo, like, ball-breaking prison shit in here. But the writer's just not good enough. Like, really not good enough. The dialogue's awful. But nevertheless, they bond. So they take Luke to see the car. As you say, Mark, he goes out, he does a load of donuts and, like, hairpins around corners and shit like that. Obviously, Maggie sees it. I'm just going to keep calling her Maggie because September's just ridiculous. She sees it. And then, again, testament to how good these guys are, the line could be better, but when the guards chase them back in and they're like, well, did anybody see that car? And the delivery from all of them turn around just going, what car? Just really like, come on, motherfucker, try it. Like, that was a genuine spit take for me. The delivery is excellent. So it's all good. Maggie sees him like careening around and then she's like, right, I need him. I'm going to put Death Race together and I need him. So she goes to see him in the shower.
Well, no, first off, then she tries to convince him to fight first, doesn't she?
She tries to convince him to fight, but she starts by going, it's all the same kind
and then
of thing.
That's where you get the shower thing.
So she goes to see him in the shower. I mean, it's a much better shower scene than 365 Days. I'll say that for it. Much better.
It's not 100% less rape, though. Yeah. but it's not as good as the Korean Jason Bourne TV show, where there's a knockdown fight between the lead guy and 17 other trained assassins in a shower scene, and they're all naked, and you've just got these tiny little sort of sensor bubbles going around as they're like
wicked
through the air.
Wicked.
I was like, I had a moment where I thought this is where it was going, and I was just like, oh my god, are they going to rip off the scene? And I was just like, oh no, it's not as good.
I mean, I'll be honest, I was a little bit disappointed by the lack of follow through in this scene, if I'm being perfectly honest.
It's a total tease
of the scene. But I mean, I'll be honest, like, again, dialogue is appalling, but genuine chemistry between them, they're both on fire in this scene. Like, it is pretty fucking steamy. Yes. Like, I was genuinely disappointed by the end of it.
But also, I was just like because he's doing a good job, like, sort of emoting, and you can see that, you know, he's kind of sort of flattering her and stuff, but he does not like her and everything. Yeah. So when he like leans in and goes for the kiss and stuff, I was just like, what the fuck are you doing, mate?
Yeah.
Like, I was like, that's from a character point of view, I was just like, he's doing it because it's in the script, but it makes zero sense for him to be doing it as a person. In fact, it's the absolute one thing that he wouldn't do in this scene. And I was like, this is only in here because they want a little bit of a, oh my God, we need a bit of romance and, like, you know, sexual subtext. But they're all in a prison, and, like, that's a little bit, like, you know.
Yeah.
Gay. So we can't be we doing can't have that. We need to think of other ways around it.
Because as we know, the Death Race films champion champion homosexuality, yeah, whatever they can find. Plus. Yeah, absolutely. You know, fully inclusive, these films. So yeah, honestly, pretty steamy shower scene, I thought. But that may just be because I've got a real thing for Maggie. But, you know, anyway, pretty good shower scene. So he doesn't fight. So of course she does the obvious thing then and takes his one supposed friend, even though he keeps saying he doesn't like Liszt. We all know he does. Like, they're bros. Yeah, Liszt is like his little brother that he doesn't want. So instead, she manages to organize it so that Liszt is in death match. So the match starts with a bitch slap, which is hilarious.
The eruption of blood.
Yeah. Genuine funny, like, laugh out loud moment again. And I'm gonna stop dunking on the fights now. I think we've said what we need to say about them. They're okay, I guess. It does what it needs to do, doesn't it? But I've done a time check. You know, we are 46 minutes in here.
Fuck all has happened.
Yeah, nothing. And we really need a reason to root for Luke now, if nothing else. Like, we have to. We have to root for him, because otherwise none of this means anything. So we then cut back to fucking Boromir, and he's banging on about some box or something at this point. And I don't know what the fuck he was talking about. I get the feeling that he went completely off page there. I reckon something was written in the script, and he was like, do you know that I was in Lord of the Rings? I could do much better than this.
I'm in the first three episodes of everything I've ever been in, goddammit.
Yeah, I could do much better than this. Just let me off the leash. And he just starts banging on about the box and what's outside the box and maybe what's inside the box. And I'm like, is this a Schrodinger thing? Like, what are we... All the while, his girlfriend, who's, like, clearly, like, just about a year too old to be his daughter, is sat half naked next to him, just bouncing up and down for no good reason, really.
I mean, she's always half naked when we see her.
Yeah.
Usually... Like, when it's the first scene where we see her, where she comes out of the pool and she's absolutely soaking wet, doesn't grab a towel because that would hide the tits, and sits next to him on the upholstered chair.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, you just wouldn't, because just no. You were literally just there so that they can put some tits in the background of the shot, because this is quote unquote character setup and relationship setup, but there's fuck all in the script here, so we need some tits to distract.
Yeah, and it's totally just so you can see that he's like a baller and stuff, and he's got a woman half his age, just, you know, scantily clad in his kitchen. Yeah. But again, like, credit to him. I've just been dunking on him for the whole box thing. But when the scene finishes and the script, like, because he's written this stuff in himself, I'm convinced of it, and the script clearly didn't know how to end the scene, so he didn't know how to get back on page. So he just ad-libs that whole shit about the sandwich, and she doesn't have a clue what the fuck he's talking about. Because he turns to her and he's just like, do you want anything else on this sandwich? And she just goes like, it's good. That's a pro. That's like, you're watching a pro in a very bad movie here.
And also, she was probably thrilled because it meant that she had to give a line of dialogue in response, which meant she could ask for more money.
Totally. But he was so off the cuff. Like, I reckon nobody on set knew he was going to do that. And he was just like, hang on, I'm just going to have to stand here until somebody yells cut. I can't do that. I'm just going to make some shit up. So yeah, all that mad rambling about the box from him. And then we cut back to the deathmatch stuff, and like, of course Luke has to intervene because Lists is in there, and now there's flamethrowers and shit because I don't know. Like, it just
and
is.
Also from a creative point of view, staggering lack of invention, giving them both flamethrowers.
Yeah, surely like there's one flamethrower.
There's like a flamethrower, like a fucking bolt gun or something. So at least you've got something to counteract yeah. one or the other. You don't give them both flamethrowers. You just stand the opposite ends and shoot at each other.
Flamethrower and a fire hose. That's how you do it.
You know, a flamethrower and a bottle of kerosene.
Yeah. I mean, this is the thing, though, right? She does say at the start of this fight that there's, like, upgraded weapons or whatever, and she alludes to the fact that there's explosives on the bus. Why the fuck didn't you just blow the bus up when somebody goes in it? Like, this is so easy.
Then you've got the flamethrowers, but then around the edges where the fence has been knocked down, there's a big fucking cylinder saying gas.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Like, seriously?
Yeah. Yep.
No, give yourself a chance. Blow that up and take the fucking prison wall with you, and off you go.
Well, yeah. I mean, this does erupt into a full-scale riot anyway. This fight, like, all hell breaks loose.
Yeah, because all that racial tension.
Yeah,
that they built up in that first scene in the cafeteria.
Yeah, it all bubbles over. All the prisoners start rioting. Luke kind of wins, I guess, sort of, because he tells the other guy to submit if he wants to stay down,
doesn't he?
Yeah, just like, stay down if you want to get out of here or whatever. Essentially telling him to submit, because again, he's our hero, so he can't kill the guy in cold blood.
Yeah.
And then he gets to go and see Kingpin. So he goes to see Kingpin, and we get all this rubbish about the prize. But, I mean, the prize doesn't mean anything because he deserves to be in prison. So again, if he was framed, if he had something to get out for, then yes, this would mean something. But it doesn't. Yeah. You know, in actual fact, it makes more sense for him to stay in prison because the only guy he seemingly knows on the outside wants him dead. So he's actually safer. Like, yes, I know people are trying to kill him in prison as well, but he's already shown that he can handle himself. So he's safer in prison where it's a quantified threat and there are guards around than he is on the outside. So it makes no sense. But anyway, whatever. I guess they just have to have some talk about it because that's how Death Race works, right? There has to be, like, you know,
talking.
Yeah. Well, no, because you have to have a reason to want to get out, basically.
Yeah.
So that's his fucking reason to get out, right? Whatever.
Yeah, so that's taken us, what, 50 minutes?
Yeah, we still haven't got to the first race yet. You know, we're still... Don't forget, he's won the fucking fight. He hasn't done anything with the race yet. So then we get the first death race. We cut to it fairly quickly. Like, he takes zero convincing after this point. Considering he was like, no, I'm not fighting, no, I'm not fighting, no, I'm not fighting. As soon as they say, like, there's cars, he's just like, yeah. Him and everybody else is just like,
this is what I didn't get, because he has this code which says he doesn't kill.
But he enters death race.
He's happy to go into a fucking death race where, no. Much like our other podcast, the aim is to kill fuckers.
Well, there's that one scene, isn't there? There's this that discussion amongst him and Lists and Danny Trejo and everybody where they just go, oh, imagine what would you do on the outside or something like that. And that's it. That's all there is. He doesn't say what he would do. None of them say what they would do. And he's only been in prison 5 fucking minutes. Like, you know, and already he's like, oh, I need to go because, like, I don't know. I need to go because
might have left the oven on or something.
I need to go because I almost had a hand job in the shower. Like, what? Why do you need to go?
Reason to stay, surely.
Right? Totally. So, I don't know. Anyway, I need to go because the triads owe me a favor. Why? I don't know. Whatever. Makes no fucking sense, right? But anyway, he decides to enter Death Race, right? My first real issue with the way this connects to the rest of the films, and just genuinely shitting on any character development that could exist between this and the first one, and also just like for this film alone. The cars have been pre-made and the perps have all got to run for the cars. Whereas in the first one, it felt like all of those cars felt like an extension of their driver's personality. That's kind of the point.
Yeah.
The driver fits the car. They've been built around them. They had their own pit crew building the cars, working on them between races. And yeah, they're just like, yeah, take whatever one you want. Just race for it.
Yeah.
That's dumb as fuck. Because now these cars don't... Yeah. It's pure fucking dumb luck that Luke happens to pick the one with the tombstone and Danny Trejo's pit crew. Like, pure dumb luck. It makes no fucking sense.
And when they start off, they're stood at the top of this sort of like platform, and they all sort of like start fighting each other to sort of go down the stairs. And it's like, why don't you just jump over the side? And you might be like, oh yeah, but that's because it's too high, Helen. They'd injure themselves if they landed on the ground, and they'd probably do themselves mischief. But no, they wouldn't have, because I could see the fucking crash mat.
But they did try to sell that, and they did try to sell somebody jumping off, and then the obviously the shot of him fucking flailing arms and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was fucking...
And then you see him land on the crash mat.
And yeah, I mean, I'm sure that platform was about as fucking tall as I was.
Yeah, it's... Yeah. It's just
fucking nonsense.
Stupid, 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 stupid. And I think it's only there because, again, the writer wasn't smart enough to actually write themselves out of the hole they got into with the whole deathmatch thing. They were like, how do we transition? Because if they've got their own cars, it's going to take months for them to set this up, right? Because they're going to work on the car. They get to design the car. I mean, it's easy, isn't it? Because you make that part of your initial pay-per-view program. You start it as a reality TV show, right? They're all building their own fucking cars so they can race each other. It's a buy-in.
Hmm.
Whatever, right? But it makes no sense to have them just race for the cars.
No, and pick one randomly.
It just ruins the whole fucking thing. So he goes for the car with the tombstone, of course, ends up getting it because the first guy that goes to jump in, the female co-pilot's just like, no, fuck off. Just get out of here. I want the hot one.
I will say this about the whole thing where they're getting in the cars and also this first sort of like race sequence. Is I liked the fact that the female sort of like quote unquote navigators actually were a little bit more useful and a little bit more contributing to the whole.
They're way better in this film. Like, the women are way better. They've got way more to do.
They're climbing out the cars. They're grabbing the guns. They're like really getting stuck in. And I was just like,
there's that one at the end that kills the driver and is just like, no, fuck you. Yeah. You're a piece of shit. Like,
that was one of the things we said in the first one, wasn't it? These women, there's no reason for them to be there other than they were eye candy. Because they didn't contribute to anything. They just sat in the car and died.
Yeah, no, they feel like they're a team in this one.
Yeah.
They do feel like they're a team. And actually, that leads on to my next note, because I have written, like, obviously, gets in the car. The race starts, and the race is great. Like, again, all the car stuff is handled really, really well. The race is really good. As good, probably, as the races in the first one. I wouldn't say better, but they're as good. Because the races in that were great as well. But I think I actually prefer them here purely because the dynamic between the co-pilot and the driver is better. And we spend more time in the cockpit of these cars, or at least it feels like we do. There is way more banter between the two of them. Like, and all right, he's not behind a mask here. Whereas, you know, Statham takes the mask off pretty early on in that first one as well.
Yeah, because they blacked out his windows, didn't they?
Just like, we'll black the windows out so you can take it off. But it just feels like there's a lot more time spent with them just shooting the shit in between maneuvers and stuff.
Yeah.
It just builds that relationship much better. So that's good. I mean, Apache jumping from fucking car to car to shiv the guy is just dope.
Yeah.
That was instantly became my favorite character when he did that. I was like, that is fucking dope.
Yeah.
He was the first time I saw somebody. And I was just like, you're playing the game properly. Yeah. You're the first person I've seen that is playing the game properly, which is fuck the rules. There are no rules. I just need to kill everyone. Yeah. And you know what? I'm going to do that by shiving you in the neck.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there are two people, actually, I would say, that play the game properly. One is him, you're right. And the other is actually Luke.
Yeah.
Because what I really liked about this first race is Luke wins it by racing. And that's the whole thing. Like, there are multiple ways you can win. You can kill everyone else, or you can cross the finish line first. You don't have to do both. You do one or the other.
Yeah.
And Luke's smart enough to realize that. He's like, no, actually, I'm a better driver than these fucking chumps. So he takes the shortcut and he wins the race through skill alone. That's good. That's the first real time where him as a character, I still don't know why he's doing all of this, but him as a character, then he's going, oh no, he's something special. Like, he's a really, really good driver, and that's his thing. Mm. Like, you understand why they want him in this now. So I think that's really, really good. The way that he, all right, we've talked about how they don't want him like killing people for funsies and stuff, but it makes sense here that he's just like, no, why would I fuck around trying to ram cars that are much, much bigger than me? Or trying at guns and stuff. I can just win this race. Yeah. I'm that good a driver. Like, I can just win this race. That makes perfect sense. It's why he's something special. And it's like, God damn it, I've written here, I've got no good reason to root for him at all. But this whole thing about him being a really good driver just sucked me in. And Luke Goss is just so fucking genuinely likable. That's the thing. Like, he's genuinely likable. He's got real charisma. Like, so, like, I want to get behind him. Like, I really, really want to buy into this and get behind him. But they're just throwing all of this away. They are flushing it down the toilet. They've got all the ingredients here, and they're not bothering with them at all. It's so fucking annoying. So we get the first race out of the way. And then we start talking about, like, all of this option A, option B shit. With like the sales and stuff like that, and what they're going to do, and I'm like, is this relevant to anything at all? Like, what are we doing here now? Because we've just like, it's like they grind the film to a complete halt to talk about like the world as such. It's absolute nonsense. Whatever. Because we soon enough, then we cut back to Mr. Fucking Wilford, and he's able to go after the female driver. Apparently, he can get into the prison and speak to the co-driver, right? To try and buy her off.
That's because he owns the prison.
Right. So, why doesn't he just get Luke out? Problem solved. Why does he have to kill him? Why is any of this happening? If he can get her out, he can get Luke out. Simples. Job done. We could have ended this film in 5 minutes.
Well, I mean, I think one of the things, because we've not brought it up before, but it was one of the things that struck me in like the opening 2 minutes of this film is, so obviously, you know, all of the prisons are run for profit, which I kind of thought American prisons were just for profit anyway.
The only things that aren't. No.
Oh, I thought they were.
No, hospitals and fucking schools and everything, yes. Prisons, no.
Well, the people that run both the TV network and the prison is the Wayland Corporation.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, so this is what they did before they started sending scientists out to find aliens.
I'm pretty sure they mentioned that in the first one as well, and it was just as cringeworthy there as well.
Yeah. But just...
Yeah. But it's interesting. Like, we've even sidelined onto it. They're now talking about the profit of it and why they felt the need to shoehorn that into what would otherwise be a perfectly good bonding scene, setting up the fucking thing with Mr. Wilford in the next fucking scene anyway. You have the whole, like, oh, either option A, they want us to kill each other, or option B, and they're talking about the ratings and the money. It's like, look, none of this fucking matters. Just have your sex scene. Like, we don't. And also, what about option C? Like, sex sells anyway, so it will be fine. It's just so ugh. Just it's blatantly there to set up the next fucking scene, which makes no sense anyway. And like I said, absolutely pisses on everything that's happened so far. It blows such a giant hole in the plot that this film cannot recover. And let's be fair, it was barely scraping along in the first place on its story, but it cannot recover from this, as is evidenced when we get to Act 3, and they all of a sudden they
there's go an Act 3.
Well, there is an Act 3, but it lasts about 2 minutes, and they realise that they've absolutely killed it here, because nobody has any reason to do anything, and they're like, how do we wrap this up quickly? off screen. That's how we do it. Everybody has a conversation off screen, and then we'll just kill everyone. It'll be fine. So yeah, awful. So that happens, and then we're straight into our next race. Now that the pedal's to the metal, it's like, fine, let's go to the next race. Let's not worry about the story anymore. Let's just have a bunch of cars. All right, fine. That's what this film has become. So I'm okay with it. But Luke decides he's going to warm up for the race by doing push-ups.
Yeah.
How does that help then? Like, what's that got to do with driving a fucking car?
It's going to make it... Yeah, no, fuck no.
Maybe the car's not got power steering, and so he needs to make sure that his arm muscles are really strong.
To be fair, looking at it, I think you're probably right.
You probably are right, actually. That car wouldn't have power steering, would it? You're probably right.
No. So, surprise, got fucking suspension.
American cars steer like shit.
True.
Like, let's be fair.
This is true. Back end goes everywhere. Like, yeah, this is true.
Yeah.
This is true. But yeah, he decides to warm up for the race by doing push-ups. Because, look, we just want to see him do push-ups, right? Fine. You don't have to try and excuse it. Just let him do some fucking push-ups. You didn't excuse it in the shower scene. You're just like, yeah, and he's naked. Because he is.
It made me laugh as well, because they put him in, because they found out about the bounty, didn't they? They overheard something on one of the camera mics about the $1 million. So we need to put him in isolation. We can't afford him to get killed off air. So we'll put him in isolation. So they might as well put him in a fucking birdcage in the middle of the yard.
Yeah, I know.
How is that completely exposed? He's got 20 fuckers around him.
That whole discussion makes no sense either, because Maggie's going like, oh, it's fine. If he's going to die, he needs to die on camera, and that's fine. No, hang on. He's your biggest commodity here now. He is your first genuine manufactured star. Yeah. You cannot have him killed on or off camera, because he is the reason people are watching. And you know this. You've said it out loud. So... that doesn't work at all. She has to protect him here. Like I said, he's safer inside than he is out. None of this makes any sense. So we get the second race. Apache deserved better to start with.
Yeah. Like,
genuinely gutted to see for him to just get mashed. And then what happens in it then? Oh, right, yeah. So we get a bunch of shit here with no context whatsoever. So he decides to go back and save the triad, right?
Yeah.
Because the triad gets kind of basically...
He's cornered.
Yeah, he's cornered. And Luke's like, no, I'm going to slam the anchors on. I'm going to go back. Right, that's fine. Okay, and I think we probably know enough as people who look into this kind of thing, who watch a lot of films, to know that this is going to pay off somehow. But... if you don't, for him to just turn around and save a guy when the object of the game is to either win the race or kill everyone else, and he's now actively not doing either of those things.
Especially when he's had zero fucking interaction with him the entire film.
Exactly. It needs context.
He does give context to this.
Yeah. That's the thing.
Because he does have to explain it afterwards, but...
Yeah. And it's...
like, as reasons went, I was like, okay, if it's a case of I understand how triads work, which is I know he's the only person in here that's not up trying to kill me because of the bounty, so therefore money's not a thing. He just wants to win the fucking race. But if I save his life, he owes me, because that's how it works.
And that's all then it means... absolutely fine.
Yeah.
But that conversation between the two of them needed to happen in the pit. Like it does in the first film. There's lots of conversations in the pit, and deals are made in the pit.
Yeah.
That needed to happen here. There needed to be a discussion between the two of them where they're just like, look, I won't come for you if you don't come for me. Yeah. And then, like, you didn't have to, like, say, like, I want a favor or anything like that. They just needed an understanding, bearing in mind that they've both spared people in the other fights as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, because for a triad, like, obviously, there's going to be a reason to take the life and stuff like that. So they both spared people in the other fights. So, they're on a level. They could have had that understanding at the very least. They needed to be something. Rather than just have him do that and then explain it after the fact. Because I was just like, what the fuck are you doing? Yeah. What the hell is this? And again, it just felt like more reasons for the writer to try and shoehorn in that, like, no, he's not that bad, really. He's a cuddly criminal. It's like, no, this doesn't... it just doesn't feel right. probably my favorite bit of the entire film next. Heat-seeking missile has been activated, and it sounds like a dodgy fucking AI voice from a 70s sci-fi film. It's exactly how you would imagine, like, yeah. Heat-seeking missile activated. Like, it's so fucking bad. It's so bad. The sound in this film is appalling.
But also, so are the missiles. It's the slowest fucking missile I've ever seen.
Yeah.
They got pissed fast.
He chases it every fucking way. Oh, we have glossed over the fact that his co-driver immediately tells him that Mr. Wilford tried to buy her off. Like, there's nothing between the two of them where she's just like, oh, you know, maybe I'll play this. Like, they don't try and put any suspense in it whatsoever. She's like, no, just so you know, just so we're on the up and up, he tried to buy me off and I said no. Like, they just, again, it's entirely pointless. I don't know why that scene exists. It does. Yeah. But as soon as they mention heat-seeking missile activated, is at that point I remember that this is actually supposed to be the origin story of Frankenstein. Because up until that point, like, I knew it going in, and then I've kind of just got lost in all the fucking deathmatch, sharp, box, fucking whatever nonsense is going on. And then there's racing, and I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. He needs to get burned to fuck at some point, doesn't he?
Yeah, because that's when they got the flamethrowers out.
Yeah.
The death match. I was like, oh, that's why they've got them.
This is how he becomes. Because, I mean, that really is the biggest issue with all of this, is he should have been Frankenstein from the start in these races, rather than being Luke and then becoming Frankenstein. Because if this is the origin story of Frankenstein, he doesn't become Frankenstein until the last, like, 15 minutes of the film. And then he has no reason. That would have been fine if, like, he had enough character behind him all the way through the film where he was just like, well, he seems like he's a good guy, but actually there's something there. Like, they could have, like, constantly referred to him as, like they do with Jason Statham's character in the first film, just calling him a monster and stuff like that. Yeah. Like, that's the arc that he needed to be on for the way they're playing this to work. Otherwise, you're right, Helen, he needs to be, like, burned straight at the start, made Frankenstein straight away, and then, like, he finds his value through Death Race, essentially. That's his route
and also,
back.
Because if they burnt him in the death match, you don't recover from that degree of burns instantly. You have to go through a bit of physio.
No, you don't, because there's a magic fucking drug they can give you. It's fine.
Yeah, but they didn't have to do that because they could have literally just done a time skip, which is how they built the fucking cars.
God, that makes so much more sense, doesn't it? And it actually and it gives him, like, if you wanted this to be like a character piece, which it kind of feels like, I think somebody thinks it is. Because it's like the origin story of Frankenstein. I think somebody thinks they've made a character piece. But that gives you that, because it, like, then, it can be before he was Frankenstein, his whole, and especially it fits in with the whole Danny Zuko thing as well, where before that he could be like, yeah, I'm the pretty boy, hey, you know, and he could be very proud of the way he looks and stuff like that. And then all of a sudden that's all taken away from him, and now he's this monster and he's rotting in a prison cell. He's got nothing to offer the world because he's racked with guilt because he's killed a cop. But actually, like, no, he's a really fucking good driver. And this death race, this is his way back. Not only does he get to leave prison, he gets to leave prison as the best death race driver and a celebrity. And so, like, he doesn't look pretty anymore, but he's...
But he still gets to regain his identity. Exactly. Because his identity wasn't ever the pretty boy. It was always the getaway driver who is a pretty boy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So there is a character piece there. But they didn't take that route. Fine. Instead, what happens is, he takes about fucking 10 minutes to outrun a heat-seeking missile, because you're right, Mark, it's the slowest missile ever. And then even when it hits him, he still manages to drive for a bit and park the car inside a garage filled with all sorts of random shit. And then he gets plenty of time to try and get out before it explodes. So much time, in fact, that she can run up and start yanking the door open. Because, of course, you run up to a car that's just been hit with a missile and is on fire. Yeah. Of course, that's the clever thing to do. And then stand right next to the car and scream hysterically. Yeah, very smart. Yeah, that's a great fucking idea.
But to be fair, they spent so much time in the film actually treating her like a person, not a hysterical woman. They needed to redress that balance.
That's what I'm saying. Like that was. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. You can't have too much character involved.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like at this point, she just devolves to being just this screaming, hysterical banshee woman because her boyfriend is burning alive. Ridiculous.
Yeah, very fucking slowly.
Very, very fucking slowly. So much so that everybody can stand around and look at him and go, ooh.
Might as well be in a smoke pit.
Yeah. I mean, all they were missing were a couple of marshmallows at this point. They were just like... right, where was I? Right, yeah, so he's on fire and stuff. This is where I've written. So this is where I'm prepared to have this argument because we kept back to September then. Like, she takes him into this experimental surgery and it all gets very Robocop again.
I was going to say very Robocop.
Yes. It's when he wakes up and he's looking at his hands and it's just like, oh yeah. So that earlier shit with the TV, like that was intentional. You did know what you were doing because it gets very, very Robocop for about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Again, look, I'll go on this ride with you. There's sci-fi elements in the first one. I'll go on the ride that there's some miracle drug and stuff like that. But we needed to sow this seed of fucking earlier. And it is easy, isn't it? Because you just link Wayland to Big Pharma and stuff like that. Yeah. And it's dead easy to do this. You know,
but... Well, yeah, because they're a big multidisciplinary corporation because they own TV stations and prisons. So I'm sure they've got a finger in some fucking drug pie somewhere.
Totally, totally. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it just comes out of nowhere. But this is where I've written, like, if the film has a hero, it's September. Because again, she's just like, oh, no, he's not fucking dying. No, he's my fucking blue-eyed boy. He is not dying. So, you know, she takes what she needs and gets him back on his feet. But... Yeah, this experiment, and I know it's an experimental treatment, and I know I said I'm willing to go on this journey, but he looks pretty fucking good for 24 hours after a crash, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's moving pretty well, and considering he was just fucking char-grilled.
If it is 24 hours, though, because they contradict themselves in a few minutes, I'll come on to that when I get to the next note. But her discussion with Ving Rhames is like, no, he's fine, he'll be ready to race tomorrow.
Well, yeah, because the whole thing was that it's three races over 3 days, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's got to be tomorrow.
And she's
got to be day three.
He'll be ready to race tomorrow. How is the car not fucking totaled as well? Because the car just shows up inside of 24 hours looking like new. Yeah.
There's a magic spray paint that you can use on the cars and you can just buff it in.
Ah, that's what it is. They just got a bit of T-cut and over they went and it was it was all good.
Job done.
Yeah.
It takes the missile hole out of the back.
Yeah, fine. But then in his intro, because they go through the whole intro, because he's now Frankenstein.
Yeah.
And it says it's been a week in his intro.
Yeah.
They mention the time scale of a week. Now it was tomorrow, not 30 seconds ago. So is it tomorrow? Or is it a week? Seems more believable, particularly given everything else that apparently Frank, Luke, whatever we're going to call him, has now had chance to put in place. Like, a week seems more realistic. But again,
I
don't...
I mean, to be fair, a week is stretching it with 95... Two second-degree burns with 95% of his body. I think a week is probably stretching it. I think the aloe vera is at a fucking pounding if he's
I mean, miracle cure and stuff as well, though. Like, you know, I'll suspend disbelief for a week. I think 24 hours is a bit much, right? Because if it can cure him to that extent in 24 hours, like surely within a week, he's just
he's fine. Back to normal,
isn't he? Just rocking around, you know. I don't know. Fuck knows. Whether it's a week, whether it's 24 hours, I don't think it really fucking matters. Because everything that happens next is just the biggest pile of bullshit we've seen thus far on a film on this show. Like, I've kind of written this a little bit stream of conscience, so I'll just read it back and this is how this montage unfolds. Okay, how did the Triad know about the money clip? I get that Lists is organizing all of this, but how did he know about the money clip? Because we never saw Luke tell him. Why does Luke reverse straight backwards into the only person that can do anything to help him in this entire situation? Why doesn't he just win the race and leave? Why does he have to become a murderer now when he was all saving everybody all the way through? Either way, it doesn't matter. Lady Chatterley's lover just got killed. It's fine. that was my thought process. Of course, it is then revealed. Well, actually, no, it's not revealed, but it's insinuated that Luke organized all of this and told Lists to go and do the thing and cashed in his debt with the Triad. But Jesus Christ, we need more to go on than that. It's very fucking thin, isn't it? Very thin.
And they try to fix that. So I've not seen it, but I've read the sort of the outline of the next one. And they even try and retcon that when you get to the next one, because this isn't the Triad repaying his debt. This is just some random fucking Chinese dude murdering Sharp.
Oh, okay.
Because there's a bit in the next film where 14K repays his debt to Frank, Luke, whatever you want to call him.
Fuck me.
Yeah, so they even shit on their own shitty timeline.
Fuck me. Okay, so...
Because having read that, there are loads of things in that that contradict the last 10 minutes of this film.
Well, this is a thing.
I don't want to go into it because I think we, at some point, we may need to watch the third one just to finish off.
Oh, definitely.
But
yeah.
So I don't want to go too far into what I've just read about it. But I'm thinking, hang on, for that to work, you need to have not done what you did to end this film.
Well, they didn't end the film. Doesn't make any fucking sense. That's the fucking problem. They haven't ended anything because they never started anything. That's the fucking problem. There's no story, and it feels like they got here, like they made him Frankenstein. And then they kind of went, right, that's what we wanted to achieve.
Yeah.
Now what? And actually, they would have been better ending it with him waking up and looking in a mirror. And then just...
Yeah.
That would have been better. That would have been an ending of sorts. Particularly if you're leading into part 3.
That then gives you that time jump to into the original film, which is set later on, which says, all right, okay, well, now Frankenstein is established...
Mm-hmm.
So we've done this, we know he is, and now he's gone off and he's established, and now we can move on with fucking Statham.
Well, no, because even then there's a bigger time jump, because by the time we get to the first film, Frankenstein's been racing for like ages and ages and ages, and this is his last race that he needs to get out, whereas he's only had 2 races now. So at some point in the middle then we have to stop and look at Luke Goss, and we have to ask ourselves, when will he be famous? But sorry.
You need at least one more.
I'm 2 for 2. Bross didn't really have any other hits. So, but genuinely, that timeline makes no sense, and it bugged me all the way through. Because by the time we get to the third one, you get the impression that Frankenstein's been a thing for a long time. Because it does. Mm-hmm. I may be misremembering this, but they don't even say that, like, he's at the point where he only needs like another race or whatever, but it's like,
he's one away from his freedom, isn't he?
Yeah, but it's a series of races, isn't it, in that first film? It's not like, so he,
yeah, it's,
if
it's
he
like
wins
whole,
all of
whole
these
event,
three, he's won one, essentially, like a Grand Prix, right?
Yeah.
So there's at least 4 more fucking races, 3 more races that he needs to go through. So none of it just doesn't make sense. The timeline doesn't marry up at all. It's bollocks. It's just bollocks. And the fact that they then try and like repay all his debts here, essentially. So he arranges to get fucking Lady Chatterley's lover off. He reverses backwards into Maggie, which is just criminal because there's a third one and she's genuinely the driving force behind this whole thing. Why off her now? And why off her so callously? Like they needed a scene, essentially.
Yeah.
They needed another scene together. He needed another scene with all of these people for any of this to work. Because let's not forget, he's had all of like 10 seconds with Sean Bean in this whole fucking film. And he's, you know, he's our main antagonist. And they've spent like 10 seconds together. And then even when he gets offed, like, it's not Luke that does it. Like, the money clip comes into play. But we need to see Luke make that call. We need to see him give that money clip to Lists to get it to the fucking Triads. Or whatever, like that. We need to see that happen, even if it's in flashback after the fact. That's okay. I don't like it, but it's fine. But we don't actually. It doesn't feel like he's got any agency because he doesn't set any of this up, as far as we know. Like I was genuinely confused until he reversed backwards. I genuinely thought it was Lists doing all of this, and he didn't know that Luke was Frankenstein. I thought that was the case. It's only when you see him reverse backwards and then Lists has a line about maybe he's still around or some shit like that. I can't remember what the exact line is.
Yeah.
Danny Trejo feeds him a line and then he just throws it back. That's the only point where you go, oh, okay. So he did organise all of this then, I think.
This is why we need to watch the third one, because again, from what I've read about it, none of that tracks.
Jesus Christ. In the third one, from what I remembered, isn't the third one like a race across a desert or something?
Yeah, so in the third one, the Death Race franchise is forcibly bought from Wayland International, moved to South Africa, and then they're racing around the Kalahari and shit, but they've got like GPS trackers which explode, so if they try and run away, they can blow their heads up and shit.
I mean, that's much better, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like Running Man on steroids, isn't it, which was the first one this was supposed to be. But that's where it goes.
Sorry, I was going to say, it's better, but it's not a wrestling coup.
No.
It's not. Very true.
No.
But to be fair, very few things are.
True.
Yeah.
True. Sorry, Mark, I interrupted.
No, it's fine. But yeah, so that's where that one goes. So it's taken to Africa. So again, it's taking Death Race International at that point. And there's some whole other bollocks about fucking, seemingly about some corporate espionage and fucking hostile takeovers and shit, which, you know, because this franchise needs that. And yeah, so then we get back. So you do get more of this timeline with Frankenstein being Frankenstein, but yeah, some of the stuff I've read, well, that doesn't make any fucking sense because you've just finished the second film by doing this, so that doesn't track.
Yeah,
because why, if they've suddenly decided they're going international and they're going to race around the desert and like blow them up, you know, sort of like literal big sand pit, for them to drive around, would you then go back to the prison where it's?
Because then the hostile takeover gets undone.
Oh.
And there's some bullshit story reasons. I say story reasons in the loosest possible fucking sense, because that implies there's a story to any of it.
Well, maybe all of that gets explained in Death Race Anarchy, which is the fourth film. I thought there was another one.
So funny enough,
Death Race Beyond Anarchy, earlier, sorry.
Yeah, I remember when we were talking about it last time, I vaguely remembered there being a fourth, and then when I was looking at it earlier, I could only see one, two, and three.
Completely new cast, though, in Death Race Beyond Anarchy. So
right.
It's got Danny Glover in it. So, you know, might be all right. Anyway, that's two films in the future yet. We're still talking about Death Race 2. It's unforgivable. This ending, or lack of, is unforgivable. And yes, a lot of the problems exist earlier in the script. Like I said, that great big plot hole that gets blown in the middle of Act 2 fucks all of this massively. Because it removes any agency that Frank could possibly have ever had. All right, because it makes it so easy for him to get out. But you could salvage it at least by having him make these fucking arrangements. We needed to see him. But like, when he's there feeling a bit sorry for himself, all fucking wrapped up in bandages and stuff, we just need to see him call lists in or pick up the phone or do whatever, right? And then he doesn't actually have to physically do any of it. He doesn't have to kill any of them. We never have to see him reverse backwards into Maggie. We don't see any of that, right? This takes care of all of that. And then you end the film with him just getting back into the car and starting the engine and driving off. And that's fine. It's fine. It's a boring film about nothing if you do that. But at least it makes sense.
Hmm.
Whereas this is just, what a fucking mess of an ending this is. What an absolute mess of an end. It's unforgivable. And like, to the point where, until this ending, for all the faults this film has, like I said, I thought it was much quicker than you said it was, Mark. I genuinely was enjoying it for what it was, right? It's a fucking B-movie, but it knows it's a B-movie.
Yeah.
I'll be honest, I was really fucking enjoying it. And then this ending just... I can forgive everything else and just laugh at it and go along for the ride.
Yeah.
I can't forgive this fucking ending. It's just properly took a dump on the whole thing. Like, it's appalling. Appalling. It's literally like the writer just got to the end and went, yeah, I'll do. And just sent in the fucking pages. Like,
I honestly think he was doing it on like a manual typewriter and he was on his last sheet of paper and he couldn't be asked at the store to buy more.
It definitely feels like can't be asked, doesn't it? It doesn't feel like I don't know better. It feels like, oh, I'll do. Ties everything up, fine, whatever. Send it off.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you've got to bear in mind as well, you know, this is Death Race 2, right? So it won't have had a lot of money plumped into it. Like, probably a bit, but it won't have had loads of money plowed into it, and it will have been on a very tight fucking turnaround. Because anybody that's bankrolling Death Race 2 wants to see a return on investment immediately. Like, this thing needs to be on supermarket shelves yesterday.
Yeah.
So, like, I get it. You know, it's not like they've got all the time in the world to refine this script, but fucking hell, you can do better than that. Like, this is probably the worst writing we've seen in a film to date on this fucking podcast, and that's saying something. And I say that because it just smacks of lack of effort. That's the problem. It's not that they don't know better. It's not that they didn't understand. It's not that, you know, they took a swing and a miss. It's just that they got to the end and went, whatever. Fuck it.
Yeah. It'll do.
Yeah. No, it won't do. It really won't do.
Yeah.
Particularly when you missed an off-ramp about 2 minutes before that you could have taken, which would have done, you know.
Yeah.
It would have been fine. If you'd have ended with him just becoming Frankenstein, wouldn't have made sense to anybody that hasn't seen the first one. But let's face it, nobody's watching Death Race 2 if you haven't seen Death Race. Not unless you stumble across it at like fucking 3 a.m. on ITV2
when you've
been on the piss. Like, in which case, you don't care.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And you won't give a fuck because you won't notice a Death Race 2. It'll just be that thing with the fucking cars in it.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. So, unforgivable. Unforgivable.
Yeah. No, I was in the same boat. I said, we've dunked on it a bit, but I enjoyed it far more than I did the first one. And there's a lot more to appreciate about it. And then, they just completely pissed away the ending. And then, from watching the thing, there were some interesting callbacks, the fact they had lists in it, the fact that he did drop the tombstone and fuck it up, I don't know, things like that. There were some really interesting tiebacks to it. But then, you get to that point and think, why the fuck have I just wasted 100 minutes for that?
Yeah. Yeah, that was the
big payoff, is that fuck all happened.
Yeah, that's it. Is it ends up feeling like a waste of your time. Whereas actually it wasn't, because like, if it's 100 minutes, then like 97 of them were actually enjoyable. For as much as it's bad, it was enjoyably bad.
Silly. It's like silly. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's like very violent, and there is a lot of male naked flesh that is on display, and that it's not all of the caliber of Luke Goss. But do you know what? It's a prison film. Mm. Like, I gave it points for, like, having all of that. I was just like, okay, so you're really embracing the setting. September's outfits, I found hysterical. It was like, everyone that was shopping for her character had a completely different concept of who she was.
Yeah, totally.
Because she went from, like, prom queen dress to dominatrix and then back again. And I was like, these are interesting choices, but you know what? I find this whole thing hysterically funny, and I'm here for all of this. The interplay between the characters, way better in this one.
Definitely.
I think because they weren't trying to be something that they weren't. Mm-hmm. The film wasn't. Like, everyone in board just knew what it was and was just absolutely like, we're not even going to pretend that this is anything other than a trashy B movie that's set in a prison, and it's violent, and it's cars, and it's carnage.
Yeah.
Great. But there's missteps that are made, like in the first act, in the second act, that you can kind of like sort of like ignore them and be just like, oh, this is pointless. Like, I'm enjoying this, but this shouldn't be happening this way. But then by the time you get to that ending, it's just like, oh, this is, I've made a series of bad decisions, and now hubris has found me.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I think we're all kind of feeling the same about it, aren't we? I
think colossally let down is the feeling, having invested the time in it and gone, you know what, this is all, it's not what I want. No, it's not great, but it's all right. And then you go, ah, fuck.
It was almost, wasn't it? That's the thing. Like, I've written in my summation here, like, it's actually, like, I've written, that was a very competent B-movie with absolutely zero fucking script. But that's okay. It's a B-movie. However, it has ended up one of the most annoying things we've watched yet, and it's all down to the last 2 minutes. That's what I've written here. Like, yeah, like I was genuinely coming down on the side of this being one of the more enjoyable things that we've watched, and I was coming down the side of it being better than the first one as well, but no, it's not. because
the thing that also just makes the ending so bad is there's so many scenes in it that should be like really contrived because the writing is so fucking poor, but the performances and the actors are doing such a good job at selling it that the amount of times I was watching a scene and I was just like, this is abysmal, and then it got to the end of the scene and I was just like, but you've sold it.
Totally.
You've managed to somehow sell that, and so I'm still in this.
Yeah, totally. Like I said, I have absolutely zero reason to get behind Luke, Lucas, Frankenstein, whatever you want to call him. None whatsoever. I've got no reason to buy into this film. But Lucas is so fucking charming that I'm just, yeah, I'll go with it. Like, he drives really well and he looks fucking cool doing it. So, fine. Like, I'm in. And it's the same for everybody. Like you say, the banter between the guys, the banter between him and his co-pilot. Like, it's all good. And it shouldn't be. And then it's like, you get to the end, you're like, yeah, no, it actually wasn't all good. Yeah, here you go. Yeah. This is what you were expecting.
Yeah.
And I just felt so disappointed. Like, properly Kevin Sorbo disappointed. Like, that's how disappointed I was.
I mean, you're not wrong, Chris.
Yeah. Look it up, listeners, for those of you that don't know.
That's a throwback.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's just ended up being a pile of wank. I hope the third one is better. I genuinely, I'm rooting for the third one now. I was curious about this one going in, you know, having felt the way I felt about the first one. I was curious with this one. I'm rooting for the third one. Like, I want them to pull this off.
Do you think we're going to go on like a 365 days trajectory with the Death Race films? I want
to.
Because the first one's bad. The second one is not good. But by the end of it, you're a little bit like, oh shit, I'm kind of like a little bit invested despite myself. And then the third one, well, I mean, I called what I wanted to happen and then it fucking did.
I mean, I hope so. Because honestly, this has left me genuinely wanting a reason to care about these characters and dive into this world, right? And I know, like, chronologically, I won't by the time we get to Death Race 1, but we've still got two films to get there, so...
Well, so Death Race 4, Beyond Anarchy, it's a sequel to the first, so they run 2, 3, 1, 4.
Oh, okay.
Just to really fucking George Lucas it up.
Which is, we've had to up our security measures because last time we ran the death race, all of the convicts managed to escape. But don't worry, viewers. Look at what we've got in place now.
That would explain the new cast. Okay, well, that'll be interesting then, because that gives them a chance to tell a whole new story. So be interested to see what they do with that. I bet that one is shit. calling it
on the basis of 1 and 2 and what 3 sounds like, yeah, you're probably right.
I'm just calling it now, but we'll see when we get there. Let's get through 3 first, see where we end up, I guess.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it would be rude not to do 3 at some point, just because we've come this far.
Yeah, for sure.
But, I think we're probably all in agreement, but we could ask the question, is it better than Mario? Chris, I'll start with you.
No, it's not. It nearly was. Very nearly was. But ultimately, no, it's fucking not, because that ending is unfucking forgivable. It's not better than Mario, and it's not better than the first Death Race.
Alan?
So, I agree that I don't think it's better than the first Death Race, and right until it got to the end, I was like, I actually think this might be the better of the two, but then the first one, at least, you do get an ending. It's not a good ending, but it's an ending.
Mm. Yeah, that's the difference, isn't it? Because I think this is a better film in every other respect, and I enjoyed it more.
However, if I was given the choice between am I going to watch Death Race 2 or Mario, I would probably pick Death Race 2 because I can just always cut it 5 minutes before it finishes and tell myself, well, I've watched Death Race 1, so I don't need to know what happens at this point.
Oh, that's cheating, though, isn't it?
I don't give a shit.
That's cheating. Like, that's cheating. That's like saying I can watch 365 days and just splice out the shower scene. That's cheating.
I mean, you'd have to splice out more than the shower scene.
True. But
yeah, everything between the opening credits and the closing credits, sure.
Yeah, but you know, you're not watching the film as intended then. So
cut it down to like 3 minutes of like Europop.
Just all the Olga bits.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm kind of of the same opinion. I was watching it, I was far more impressed. I was far more entertained. I was far more into this one than I was the original. But yeah, it's that last 5 minutes. Just completely pissed it away. So I felt very let down. As to whether whether I'd say this is better than Mario, absolutely not. Because at least Mario, you know, if you're trying to look at a story, it has start, middle, and end. Again, it's not great, but at least it has that to it. Whereas this, you just go, oh, I've wasted 100 minutes.
Yeah,
and I'm just ridiculously let down by it. So I would say this is not better than Mario. Similarly, I would have said right up until the end, this was better than the first Death Race as well. And then I didn't go back and listen to our episode on that because I didn't have time, but I was pretty fucking annoyed with that one.
Oh, I fucking hated it. I hated it. But I hate the ending of this film even fucking more.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And were it not for the ending, I think this would be an infinitely better film, but it's not because this is what we got.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's fairly decisive. Again, as always, listeners, love to know what you think. Get in touch on Twitter at @DDPodcastNet. You can go to our website and get in touch with us there. You can also pick up our previous episodes and our other shows as well. Wherever you get your podcasts from, subscribe, leave a message, get back as best you can. Next up, it's Chris's choice for Easter, and it's Bunny the Killer Thing.
It's going to be good. I can feel it in my bones.
Yeah, I don't really know what to say apart
from
that.
With a title like that, got to be good, right?
I mean, it's up against Beaster Bunny, so like the bar's not exactly high.
No, it's really not.
No, but the viewers might have to be.
Well, no, technically, it's not up against the Beaster Bunny, because Beaster Bunny was shit. However, last year for Easter, we did Jesus Christ Vampire Hunter, which was excellent.
Oh, yes.
So
yeah.
That's the one to beat. I don't think it'll be that good, but,
no.
I mean, it sounds pretty fucking amazing. So it's going to it's gonna be a Marmite film,
the title like
I guarantee you. So stay tuned, listeners.
But yeah, so look forward to that one. But until next time.
See you later.
Ta-ra.